Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. And, you know, we love our partnership with the folks at Disney. It is a magical partnership. It's all about veterans. And, boy, I mean, what great stories every single time we talk to somebody. And today, Stephen Vagnini, I love that name, Stephen Vagnini. He's a content strategy manager and a creative producer for the Walt Disney Archives. I mean, the keys to the kingdom. He began his Disney career at Walt Disney World in Florida in 2005 and would go on to produce special events as a marketing and programming leader at D23, the official Disney fan club. He's also held the title of Imagineer, supporting the creative engine that designs and builds Disney theme parks, resorts, attractions, and cruise ships around the world. As a best-selling author, Stephen has written for a variety of publications and has co-authored books on the Walt Disney Company. Stephen, man, what a job. How you doing?
I am doing great today, Randy. How are you?
Well, I'm not as good as you. I mean, it sounds like this is like the dream job of anybody. The Disney Archives sounds pretty cool. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, well, our work at the Archives is probably best summed up through our mission, which is that we collect, we preserve, and we share the history of Walt Disney and the company that he founded. So, you know, we've been doing this since 1970 when our founder, Disney legend Dave Smith, felt that there should be a place where all this amazing Disney history, right, our storytelling, the creative materials that go into the production of our films, some place where all that could be preserved. Because if you think about, you know, any major entertainment company, who reuses and celebrates and really acknowledges its past more than Disney does?
Right,
you know, look
right.
at a character like Mickey Mouse. He's, you know, looking at 95 years of Mickey this year, and of course, he's everywhere. So we're thrilled to have a place where we can work to help tell the stories of our company's past, and it continues to grow as our company history continues to progress.
Oh, man, I love that so much, and I love looking back at some of the old Disney stuff. It's just, you know, it's nostalgic and innovative at the same time. And is that where you keep the Ark from Indiana Jones, stuff like that?
All I can say to that is that belongs in a museum. That's actually to be technical, part of the Lucasfilm Archives, which is a partnering team, if you will, outside the company. But we do have thousands of dimensional items from Disney film productions, TV shows, theme park attractions, models, props, ride vehicles, audio animatronics figures, 15,000 historical costumes. So, you know, we're talking thousands and thousands of boxes of material as well in terms of merchandise, you know, documents, things like Walt Disney and Roy Disney's correspondence, 25 million photographs as part of the photo collection.
Wow.
Yeah. The collections are very diverse, and we have a great team that helps to manage all of that, right? We have teams that acquire the materials, teams that help preserve and restore material, groups that exhibit this material all around the world through traveling exhibitions. And specifically, I support a role in our research team, which is to collect and manage the information of our company. Because as you might imagine, information is a pretty important asset.
Yeah.
So whether we're collaborating with filmmakers on new projects or merchandisers or theme park planners, we're always there to assist with matters related to Disney history. We handle a variety of questions that come our way, everything from how tall was Walt Disney? You know, he was 5'10", to how much does Walt Disney World weigh? That's actually a question we receive. You know, the answer's complicated there. We can't give you a quick answer.
Right. We're talking to Stephen Vagnini here on the National Defense Content Strategy Manager and Creative Producer for the Walt Disney Archives. That just sounds so cool to get to see some of this stuff. And once you've got these things curated, Stephen, are they also online where people can go and look at some of this stuff?
Yeah, there are many ways our fans and audiences can engage with our materials. So online, there is the D23 website. D23 is the official Disney fan club, and the Archives has a great relationship with them. We have since day one. So we have all sorts of historical articles and reference material if you're looking for historical information on the company. But also, we exhibit these dimensionally in person. So right now, our largest exhibition to date, the blockbuster Disney 100, the exhibition, is currently touring. It features more than 250 what we call crown jewels of the Archives. So, you know, props and costumes, but also works of art, incredible storytelling presented in ways like we've never done before. It's 15,000 square feet. And there's not just one exhibition. There are two of them. We have one currently touring in the U.S. and another one currently in Europe in celebration of our 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company. So we do turn 100. Our centennial is October 16th of 2023. So we're excited to share all this material and storytelling with our fans through the exhibition and then through many other ways, whether online, digitally, or in person.
So October 16th is the 100th anniversary, right?
That's right. That's the day in 1923 when a young Walt Disney and Roy O. Disney signed a contract to produce a series of shorts called the Alice Comedies. This was a revolutionary way of presenting our stories with a live-action character in a cartoon setting. And of course, a huge success, but that was the beginning of the Disney Brothers Cartoon Studio, which would go on to become the Walt Disney Company that we know and love today.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. My birthday is October 17th, and I'm also turning 100, but I don't have any archives. Stephen, listen, I mentioned earlier you're an accomplished author of some best-selling books. You wrote a book on Disney. Can you share a little bit of details, some of the books you're most proud of?
Oh, absolutely. I'll share a bit about two newer books, which have been created in close partnership with the archive staff. They're invaluable in terms of the knowledge, the expertise they bring to this. So huge kudos to the entire team at the archives and throughout the company that have a role in these books. One is A Portrait of Walt Disney World, 50 Years of the Most Magical Place on Earth, which I co-wrote with archivist Kevin Kern and Disney historian and author Tim O'Day. And this is a way of condensing 50 years of Walt Disney World into a coffee table book. But, you know, we did so with great love and great excitement, presenting the stories of, you know, four theme parks, numerous resort hotels, entertainment areas, using concept art, great photography, and stories from the voices of about 100 folks who we interviewed that had a role to play in the creation of the resort. So that came out for our 50th anniversary a few years back. And about to be released in September is the sixth edition of Disney A to Z, the official encyclopedia. Ooh. And this was started by Dave Smith, our Disney legend and founder, who I mentioned earlier, that started the archives. It is your one-stop shop for information about the company, whether you're looking for information on our feature films, our TV shows, our streaming shows on Disney Plus, notable, you know, talent and creative personnel, even every theme park attraction, theme park restaurant, theme park shop at every Disney park around the world, you'll find an entry for it. And so I've had the great honor to collaborate with Dave on the last two editions. Sadly, we lost Dave in 2019, but very honored to be able to carry the torch and allow this to be a living tribute to his work and allow the encyclopedia to move forward, especially for our centennial edition being released right before the 100th anniversary.
Oh, man, that is so cool. And the other thing, Stephen, I know just with my brief time at Disney World is the fact that you've got to have their trust completely. I mean, you write a book about Disney, it's got to be right. And so, I mean, the time that you spent there as an archivist and different things, you've obviously, you know, had all of that information at your fingertips. And what a phenomenal thing to be able to have. And, you know, we talked about the 100 years. 100 years of company history is just an incredible achievement. And we talked about, you know, this is, my eyes were certainly opened about the many military veterans that helped write the history of the company, right?
That's right. Disney's respect and our admiration for those who serve in uniform actually stems from our founder's own call to service. So in a way, this has been part of our company's DNA even before the Disney Company was founded 100 years ago. So, you know, you can go back to the World War I era and a young Roy Oliver Disney, right, our future company co-founder, served as a petty officer on a naval cargo ship in the Atlantic. Hmm. You know, he would join the war effort in June of 1917, almost 3 months after America's entry into the war. But his younger brother, Walt, who was then 15, also wanted to serve his country. And he also thought his brother looked awfully swell in a sailor uniform. now, they actually had two older brothers, Herb and Raymond, who were serving in the Army. Actually, it was the newly formed American Expeditionary
Corps. Right.
Yeah. And so that fall, you know, Walt, you know, he's too young to serve, but he becomes a cartoonist for his high school magazine. And some of the cartoons he was working on were themed to the war effort. And he was encouraging, you know, buying war saving stamps, you know, saving and serving. Right. These were slogans he would put into his cartoons. And so the next year, Walt tries to join the military. But at age 16, you know, he is still too young to serve. So he finds out about this Red Cross unit that is taking 17-year-olds. And Walt thinks that he could pass for 17. So he falsifies the age on his passport and he's accepted by the Red Cross in September of that year. He would train in Sound Beach, Connecticut, and from there he was sent to France in November. But that was 1 week after the armistice was signed. So although the war had ended, he had plenty to do for 9 months when he was in France, you know, driving an ambulance, chauffeuring dignitaries, and so forth. But, you know, besides Roy, there would be many Disney personnel who would participate in the war effort. And actually, as veterans, they were hired by Walt and Roy to establish the company. So a couple quick names I'd love to share. You know, one is an unsung Disney legend named Bill Garrity. And he had served in the radio research and development section of the U.S. Signal Corps. But he would go on to serve as the first manager for the Walt Disney Studios. And it was really him who helped bring sound to Steamboat Willie, which, as you may know, Yes. And, you know, his team created the multiplane camera, which added depth and dimension to animation. He would help create Fantasound, which is the forerunner to stereophonic sound that was created for Fantasia. So these really huge milestones under the leadership of Bill. Another name from that era is Ben Sharpstein, another name that may not be as well known. He had served with the Marines in World War I, but he joined Disney the year after Mickey Mouse came on the scene in 1928. He quickly became Walt's right-hand man, directing animated shorts, directing sequences in films like Snow White and many of our other early animated films. And many legendary studio personnel who would serve in World War II are also worth mentioning here, of course. You know, folks like Frank Thomas, one of Walt's nine old men of animation. He served in the Army Air Forces, you know, left the studio for a while, came back. But he's a key animator who would breathe life into these animated characters, right? He is the one behind the classic spaghetti eating sequence in Lady and the Tramp. So just a phenomenal talent. And also, you know, I'd love to mention Card Walker here. You know, Card served in the Navy during World War II. He had started in the 1930s at the studio in the mailroom, but would rise the ranks through marketing. Eventually, he would be named president, then CEO and chairman for Walt Disney Productions into the 1970s and 1980s. So a very proud, you know, service there as well. And all these individuals helped create the Disney filmmaking, you know, the brand of entertainment that we know today. It's all thanks to so many folks like this who impacted the entertainment industry and really American culture at large.
Yeah, you know, when you think about World War II and the men and women who came back and served in so many different capacities, it's not surprising that they also helped to create Disney and Disney World. I know we've talked before about Rear Admiral Joe Fowler's work there. He was a Naval Academy graduate, served in World War I and World War II. But our Naval Academy graduates that are listening right now are excited to hear one of their own help build so much magic. How about anybody from West Point?
Yeah, so here we can talk about retired Army Major General Joe Potter. Another Joe. You have Joe Fowler and you also have Joe Potter. And Joe served in World War II. Actually, he worked on the logistical planning for the Red Ball Express after the Normandy landing. And that included the moving of some 400,000 tons of supplies and rations through Europe right after D-Day. And he would go on to manage so many historical water projects with the Army Corps of Engineers. He was later appointed by President Eisenhower, actually, to serve as the governor of the Panama Canal Zone. And so this made him perfectly suited to oversee a massive effort in Central Florida taking place in the 1960s. This, of course, was the creation of Walt Disney's Florida project, Walt Disney World, which required a massive water reclamation effort. So under Joe Potter's leadership, you know, we saw the carving of some 43 miles of winding man-made canals. And that was really needed to allow all this construction to actually take place, right? We were dealing with wetlands, we were dealing with swamps. And so his expertise in bringing in the Army Corps of Engineers that he had worked with previously was a huge help to make Walt Disney World happen in the first place. And he would go on to develop really the entire infrastructure for Walt Disney World, a revolutionary network of utility systems and water treatment plants and so much more that made the first phase of that project with Magic Kingdom, with this man-made Seven Seas Lagoon, with the many resort hotels, a possibility. And so it's safe to say, I think, that without Joe Potter or Joe Fowler, we never would have had a Walt Disney World as we know it today.
Wow. Yeah, what a legacy. What an incredible job those men did. And Stephen, listen, we got to wrap up, but thank you so much for taking the time. I could talk about this all day. My final question is, in the archives, do you have thousands and thousands of matching T-shirts?
That is a great question. We do have a lot of mouse ears, as you might imagine, a lot of... a lot of theme park tickets, there's quite a bit there. But, you know, we are just so proud, I want to share, of the many veterans who have helped build the foundation of our company and those who are part of our company today. So enormous shout out and thank you to them. And thank you, you as well, for all the efforts that you do.
My honor. Absolutely my honor. But Stephen, thank you so much for the time and continued great success, man.
Thank you. Really my pleasure. Thanks for everything you're doing.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.